tears started at his eyes and rolled down his cheeks. There were complications. Complications. I tried to find something to say, but couldn't. Damn it. Tired frustration stirred my already unsteady belly. This shouldn't have happened. If I'd been faster or smarter, or made a better decision, maybe I could have stopped Charity from getting hurt. Or the baby. I put my hand on Michael's shoulder and squeezed tight, just trying to let him know that I was there, for all the good I'd done. He took in a breath. The doctor thinks I beat her. That's how she got the bruises. He never said anything, but... Oh, that's ridiculous, I said at once. Stars and stones, Michael, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. His voice came out hard, bitter. He stared at his faint reflection in the glass. It might as well have been me, Harry. If I hadn't gotten myself involved, this demon wouldn't have gone after her. I heard his knuckles pop as he clenched his fists. It should have come after me. You're right, I said. Holy hell, Michael, you're right. He shot me a look. What are you talking about? I rubbed my hands together, trying to sort through the ideas flashing across my brain in neon lights. It's a demon, this thing we're after, right? It's a demon's ghost. An orderly walking by, pushing a tray, gave me an odd look. I smiled at him, feeling rather manic. He hurried along. Yes, Michael said. Demons are tough, Michael. They're dangerous and they're scary, but they're really kind of clueless in a lot of ways. How so? They just don't get it about people. They understand things like lust and greed and the desire for power, but they just don't get things like sacrifice and love. It's alien to most of them. Doesn't make any sense at all. I don't understand what you're driving at. Remember what I said about how I knew the worst way to get to you would be through your family? His frown darkened, but he nodded. I know that because I'm human. I know what it's like to care about someone other than myself. Demons don't. Especially the thug-like demons who make pacts with two-bit sorcerers like Kravos. Even knowing that I thought the best way to get to you would be through someone close to you, I don't think a demon would have understood the context of that information. So what you're saying is that this demon would have no reason to go after my wife and child. I'm saying it's inconsistent. If it was just a question of a demon's ghost going after the people who had killed it, then it should have just hammered on us until we all died and been done with it. I don't think it ever would have occurred to it to take a shot at someone that we care about, even if it did have my knowledge about you. There's got to be something else going on here. Michael's eyes widened a bit. The nightmare is a cat's paw, he said. Someone else is using it to hit at us. Someone who can cast those barbed wire torment spells, I said. And we've been chasing around after the tool instead of going after the hand that's wielding it. Blood of God, Michael swore. It was about the second most powerful oath he used. Who could it be? I shook my head. I don't know. Someone who has us both in common, I guess. How many enemies do we share? He wiped his eyes on his sleeves, expression intent. I'm not sure. I've made enemies with pretty much every creature in the country. Ditto, I said morosely. Even some of the other wizards wouldn't mind seeing me fall down a few flights of stairs. Not knowing our attacker's identity doesn't bother me as much as something else, though. What's that? Why he hasn't taken us out already? They want to hurt us first. Vengeance. His brow beetled. Could your godmother be behind this? I shook my head. I don't think so. She's a fairy. They aren't usually this methodical or organized, and they aren't impatient either. This thing's been active every night, like it couldn't wait to get going. Michael looked at me for a moment, then he said, Harry, you know that I don't think it's my place to judge another person. I could hear a but coming. He nodded. But how did you get mixed up with the likes of that fairy? She's bad, Harry. Some of them are merely alien, but that one is malevolent. She enjoys causing pain. Yeah, I said. I didn't exactly pick her. Who did? I shrugged. My mother, I think. She was the one with power. My father wasn't a wizard, wasn't into their world. I don't understand why she would do that to her child. Something inside me broke with a little snapping sensation, and I felt tears at my eyes. I scowled. They were child's tears to go with a child's pain. I don't know, I said. I know that she was mixed up with some bad people, bad beings, whatever. Maybe Leah was one of her allies. Leah. It's short for Lianxi, isn't it? Yeah, I don't know her real name. She takes blood from mortals and gives them inspiration in return. Artists and poets and things. That's how she amassed most of her power. Michael nodded. I've heard of her. This bargain you have with her, what is it? I shook my head. It isn't important. Something shifted in Michael, became harder, more resolute. It's important to me, Harry. Tell me. I stared at the babies for a minute before I said, I was a kid. Things fell out with my old teacher, Justin. He sent a demon to kill me, and I went on the run. I made a bargain with Leah. Enough power to defeat Justin in exchange for my service to her, my loyalty. And you broke faith with her. More or less, I shook my head. She's never pushed it before now, but I've been careful to stay out of her way. She doesn't usually get this involved with mortal business. Michael moved his hand to Amaracus's empty scabbard. She did take the sword, though. I winced. Yeah, I guess that was my fault. If I hadn't tried to use it to weasel out of the deal. You couldn't have known, Michael said. I should have, I said. It isn't as though it's a tough one to figure out. Michael shrugged, though his expression was less casual than a gesture. What's done is done. But I don't know how much help to you I can be without a sword. We'll get it back, I said. Leah can't help herself. She makes deals. We'll figure out a way to get it back from her. But will we do it in time? Michael said. He shook his head, grim. The sword won't stay in her hands forever. The Lord won't allow that. But it may be that my time to wield it is past.
What are you talking about? I asked.
Perhaps it was a sign. Perhaps that I am no longer worthy to serve him in this way, or that the burden of it has passed on to someone else. He grimaced, staring at the glass, the infants. My family, Harry. Perhaps it's time they had a full-time father. Oh, great. All I needed now was a crisis of faith and a bad case of career doubt from the fist of God. I needed Michael. I need someone to watch my back, someone who was used to dealing with the supernatural. Sword or no sword, he had a steady head. His faith had a subtle power of its own. He could be the difference between me getting killed and defeating whoever was out there. Besides, he had wheels. Let's get going. Time's a-wasting, he frowned. I can't. I'm needed here. Michael, look, is someone with your kids at home?
Yes. I called Charity's sister last night. She went over. Father Forthill is going to get some sleep and then stay on.
Is there anything more you can do for Charity here?
He shook his head. Only pray. She's resting now, and her mother is on the way here.
Okay, then. We've got work to do.
You expect me to leave them again?
No, not leave them, but we need to find the person behind the nightmare and take care of them.
Harry, what are we going to do? Kill someone?
If we have to. Hell's bells, Michael. They might have murdered your son.
His face hardened, and I knew then that I had him, that he'd follow me into hell to get at whoever had hurt his wife and child. I had him all right, and I hated myself for it. Way to go, Harry. Jerk those heartstrings like a fucking puppeteer. I held up the book.
I think I've got a line on the nightmare's name. I'll bet you anything that Kravos recorded it in his Book of Shadows here. If I'm right, I might be able to use it to make contact with the nightmare and then trace his leash back to whoever's holding it.
Michael stared at the glass, at the kids beyond it.
I need you to drive me home. From my lab, I might be able to sort out what's going on before things get any more out of hand. Then we go handle it.
He didn't say anything.
Michael.
All right, he said. voice quiet. Let's go. Chapter 23. Back in my lab, felt a little creepy to be working by candlelight. Intellectually, I knew that it was still full daylight outside, but last night had brought out the instinctive fear of the dark, and it's part of being human. I had been wounded. Everything, every shadow, every small sound made me twitch and jerk and look aside. Steady, Harry, I told myself. You have time before sundown. Just relax and get it over with. Good advice. Michael and I had driven around most of the morning, collecting what I would need for the spell. I'd read through Kravis's journal while Michael drove. Sick stuff. He'd been careful about listing out every step of his rituals, complete with notes on the physical ecstasy he'd experienced during the killings. 9 in all. Most of them had been women or children he'd killed with a cruelly carved knife. He'd roped a bunch of young people into his fold with drugs and blackmail, and then thrown orgies, where he'd either participate or else channel the energy raised by all that lust into his magic. That seemed to be standard operating procedure for guys like Kravos. Win-win situation. A thorough man. Thorough in his efforts to kill and corrupt lives to acquire more power. Thorough in the documentation of his sick pleasures, and thorough in the listing of his efforts to secure a familiar demon by the name of Azothrogal. The name had been carefully written, each syllable marked for specific emphasis. Magic is a lot like language. It's all about stringing things together, linking one thing with another, one idea with another. After you establish links, then you pour power into them and make something happen. That's what we call thaumaturgy in the business, creating links between small things and big things. And then you make something happen on a small scale, and it happens on a large scale, too. Voodoo dolls are a typical example of that one. But simulacra like a voodoo doll aren't the only way to create links. A wizard can use fingernail clippings, or hair, or blood, if it's fresh enough, or just about any other part of the body to create a link back to the original being. Or you can use its name. Or maybe I should say its name. Names have power. Everyone's name says something about them, whether they're aware of it or not. A wizard can use that name to forge a link to someone. It's difficult with people. People's self-concepts are always changing, evolving, so even if you get someone to tell you their full name, if you try to establish the link when they're in a radically different mood, or after some life-changing event that alters the way they see themselves, it might not work. A wizard can get a person's name only from their own lips, but if he doesn't use it fairly quickly, it's likely to get stale. Demons, however, are a different matter. Demons aren't people. They don't have the problem of having a soul. They don't worry about silly things like good and evil or right and wrong. Demons are. If a demon is going to be inclined to eat your face, it's going to eat your face then and now and 1,000 years from now. It's almost comforting in a way, and it makes them vulnerable. Once you know a demon's name, you can get to it whenever you want to. I had Azothrogal's name. Even though it was a ghost now instead of a demon, it ought to respond to the memory of its name, if nothing else. Time to get to it. 5 white candles surrounded my summoning circle, the points of an invisible pentacle. White for protection. And because they're the cheapest color at Walmart. Hey, being a wizard doesn't make money grow on trees. Beneath each candle was an object of someone the nightmare had touched. My shield bracelet was there. Michael had given me his wedding ring and charities. I'd gone by the station and grabbed the hand-lettered nameplate Murphy had kept stubbornly on her office door until the publicity last year had driven the municipal politicians into getting her a real one. It lay on the floor beside them. A visit to a Grateful Malone household had turned up Mickey's retirement watch. It completed the circle between the last pair of candles. I drew in a breath and checked my props. You don't need all the candles and knives and whatnot to work magic, but they help. They make it easier to focus. And in my weakened condition, I needed all the help I could get. So I lit the incense and paced around the outside of the summoning circle, leaving myself enough room to work with inside the circle of incense and outside the circle of copper. I put out a little willpower as I did, just enough to close the circle, and felt the energy levels rise as random magic coalesced.
Harry, Michael called down from the room above, are you finished?
I suppressed a flash of irritation.
Just getting started. 45 minutes until sundown, he said.
I couldn't keep the annoyance out of my voice.
Gee, thanks. No pressure, Michael. Can you do it or not, Harry? Father Forthill is staying at my house with the children. If we can't stop this thing now, I've got to get back to charity. I sure as hell can't do it with you breathing down my neck. Hell's bells, Michael. Get out of the way and let me work.
He growled something to himself about patience or turning the other cheek or something. I heard his feet on the floor above as they retreated from the door leading down to my lab. Michael didn't come down into the lab with me because the whole concept of using magic without the Almighty behind it didn't sit well with him. Regardless of what we'd been through together, he could tolerate it, but not approve of it. I got back to work, closing my eyes and forcing myself to clear my thoughts, to focus on the task at hand. I started to draw my concentration toward the copper circle. The incense smoke tickled at my senses and swirled about inside the perimeter of the outside circle, not leaving it. The energy grew slowly as I concentrated, and I picked up the knife in my right hand and a handful of water from a bowl on my left. Now for the three steps. Enemy, mine enemy, I spoke, slipping power into the words. I seek you. I passed the knife over the copper circle straight down. I couldn't see it without opening my sight, but could feel the silent tension as I cut a slit between the mortal world and the never-never. Enemy, mine enemy, I spoke again. I search for you. Show me your face. I cast the water up over the circle, where the energy of the spell atomized it into a fine, drifting mist filled with rainbows from the surrounding candles, shifting shapes and colors. And now for the hard part.
Azathrogal, I shouted. Azathrogal, Azathrogal, apare!
I used the knife to cut my finger and smeared blood onto the edge of the copper circle. Power surged out of me into the circle, through the rent in the fabric of reality, and as it did, the circle sprang up like a wall around the band of copper on the floor. I felt the cut as an acute, vicious pain, enough to make me blink tears out of my eyes as the power quested out, fueled by the energy of the circle, guided by the articles spread around it. The spell quested about in the never-never, like a blind tentacle of the kraken scouring the deck, looking for some hapless soul to grab. It shouldn't have happened like that. It should have zipped to the nightmare like a lariat and brought it reeling in. I reached out and put more power into the spell, picturing the things that I had been fighting, the results of its work, trying to give the spell more guidance. It wasn't until I hit upon the sense of the nightmare, for lack of a better word, the terror that it had inspired, that the spell latched on to something. There was a moment of startled stillness, then a wild, bucking energy, a resistance that made my heart pound in my chest, the cut in my finger burn as though someone had poured salt over it.
Apare!
I shouted, forcing my will into my voice, reeling back in on the spell.
I command thee to appear!
I slip into the archaic at dramatically appropriate moments, so sue me. Things were stirring in the air within the summoning circle. It struggled like a maddened bull trying to tear away from the spell.
Apare!
Upstairs, the telephone rang. I heard Michael walk across the floor while I struggled through several silent, furious seconds, the nightmare trying to escape the web of my concentration.
Hello,
Michael said. He left the door open and I heard him clearly.
Apare!
I grated out. I felt the thing slip, and I jerked it closer in vicious triumph. The mists and lights swirled, began to take on shape, vaguely humanoid.
Oh, yes, but he's, a little busy,
Michael said.
Uh-huh. No, not exactly. I think, yes, but,
Michael sighed. Just a minute. I heard his feet cross to the trapdoor again.
Harry, Michael called. Susan's on the phone. She says she needs to talk to you.
I all but screamed, struggling to hold on to the nightmare.
I'll call her back,
I managed to gasp. She says it's really important.
Michael!
I half screamed.
I'm a little busy here.
Harry, Michael said, his voice serious. I don't know what you're doing down there, but she sounds very upset. She says she's been trying to get in touch with you for a while without any luck. The nightmare started slipping away from me. I gritted my teeth and hung on.
Not now!
All right, Michael said. He retreated from the door down to the lab, and I heard him speaking quietly on the phone again. I blocked it out, blocked everything but my spell, the circle, and the thing on the other end of it. I was tiring, but so was it. I had all the props, the power, and the focus of the circle. It was strong, but I had the leverage on it. And after another minute and a half, I shouted,
"Apparay!"
for the last time. The mists in the circle swirled and trembled, taking on a vaguely humanoid shape. The shape screamed, a faint and bubbly sound, still trying to escape.
"You can't get away," I shouted at it. "Who brought you over? Who sent you?"
"Wizard," the thing screamed. "Release me!"
"Yeah, right. Who sent you?"
I forced more energy into my voice, compulsion. It screamed, a distorted sound, like a radio getting interference. The shape refused to clarify or solidify anymore.
"No one!"
"Who sent you?"
I said, hammering on the spell in the nightmare with my will.
"Who has compelled you to harm these people? Hell's bells, you will answer me!"
"No one!"
the nightmare snarled. Its struggling redoubled, but I grabbed on tightly. And then I felt it. A third party, intruding from the other side. I felt that cold, horrible power that had been behind the torment spell on Mickey Malone and on Agatha Hagglethorne's ghost. It poured into the nightmare like nitrous into an engine and supercharged it. The nightmare went from a raging bull to a frenzied elephant, and I felt it begin to tear free of my spell, to get loose.
"Wizard!" it howled in triumph. "Wizard! The sun is sinking! I will tear out thy heart! I will hunt thy friends and their children! I will slay them all!"
"It's thine heart," I muttered, "and no you won't."
I lifted my left hand and slashed it at the sparkling mist, sprinkling droplets of blood at it.
"Bound thou art," I snarled.
I reached out toward the thing, and found the part of me that was still inside of it, a warm sensation, like coming home again after a long trip. I could only barely brush it, but it was enough for what I wanted to do.
"No other souls wilt thou harm, no other blood wilt thou spill. Thy quarrel is now with me. Bound I make thee, bound!"
And with the third repetition of the word, I felt the spell lock, felt it settle around the nightmare like steel coils. I couldn't keep it from getting away. I couldn't forbid it from the mortal world altogether, but I could damn well make sure that the only person it could mess with would be me.
"Now, let's see how you do in a fair fight, asshole."
It screamed, all but bursting the bonds of my spell, the sound reverberating through the room. I lifted the knife in my other hand and ripped it at the air over the circle, releasing the holding spell, pouring everything I had left into the strike. I saw the magic lance out into the circle, even as the nightmare faded. It split the rainbow mist like a sweep of some invisible woodman's axe, and once again, the nightmare screamed. Then the mist gathered together in a horrible rush, an implosion of space, and the creature was gone. A handful of water splattered to the ground, and the candles went out. I collapsed to my forearms, wheezing and gasping for breath, my muscles shaking. I'd hurt the bastard. It wasn't invincible. I'd hurt it. Maybe nothing much more inconvenient than a cut on my finger or a slap in the face, but it hadn't expected that. I hadn't been able to get to the person behind it, but I'd felt something. I'd sensed their presence, gotten a clear whiff of their perfume in the metaphysical sense. Maybe I could use that. "Take that, jerk," I mumbled. I lay there gasping for several minutes, my head spinning from the effort of the spell. Then I put my things away and shambled out of the lab into the room above. Michael helped me to a seat. He'd built up a fire, and I soaked in its warmth gratefully. He went to the kitchen and brought me a Coke, a sandwich. I drank and ate greedily. Only after I'd finished the last of the drink did he ask, "What happened?" I called it up. A nightmare. Someone helped it to get away, but not before I laid a binding on it. He frowned at me, gray eyes studying my face. "What kind of binding?" "I kept it from going after you, or Murphy, or your family. I couldn't keep it out, but I could limit its targets." Michael blinked at me for a moment, then said slowly, "By making it come after you." I grinned at him, a fierce show of teeth, and nodded, a touch of pride filling my voice. "I had to do it at the last second, on the fly. I hadn't really planned it, but it worked. So long as I'm alive, it can't mess with anyone else." "So long as you're alive," Michael said. He frowned and leaned his thick forearms on his knees, pressing his palms together. "Harry?"
"Yeah."
"Doesn't that mean it's certainly going to try to kill you? No torment, no sadistic torture, just flat-out mayhem and death." I nodded, sobering.
"Yeah. And whatever person is behind the nightmare, whoever helped it escape, that means that you've just put yourself in their way. They can't use their weapon until they've removed you."
"Yeah."
"So, if they didn't need you dead before, they're going to stop at nothing else now."
I was quiet for a moment, thinking about that.
"I made my choice, man," I said, finally. "But hell, I'm already in water so deep, it doesn't matter if I get any deeper. Let the nightmare and my godmother duke it out for who gets to be first in line."
His eyes flickered up at mine.
"Oh, Harry, you shouldn't have done that."
I scowled at him.
"Hey, it's better than anything else we've managed so far. You'd have done the same thing if you could."
"Yes," Michael said, "but my family is well provided for." He paused and then added in a gentle voice, "And I'm sure of my soul's destination when it's time for me to go."
"I'll worry about hell later. Besides, I think I have a plan."
He grimaced.
"You aren't concerned about your soul, but you have a plan."
"I don't intend to get killed just yet. We've got to take the offensive, Michael. If we just sit back and wait, it's going to be able to take us apart."
"Take you apart, you mean?" he said. His expression grew more troubled.
"Harry, without Amarakis, I'm not sure how much help I'll be to you."
"You know what you're doing, Michael. And I don't think the Almighty is going to quit the team just because we fumbled the ball, right?"
"Of course not, Harry. He is ever faithful."
I leaned toward him, put a hand on his shoulder, and looked him right in the eyes. "I don't do that to people very often. There aren't many I can.
Michael, this thing is big, and it's bad, and it scares the hell out of me. But I might be the only one who can stop it now. I need you. I need your help. Hell, man, I need to know that you're at my back, that you believe in what I'm doing here. Are you with me or not?"
He studied my face.
"You've lost much of your power, you say. And I don't have the sword anymore. Our enemies know it. We could both be killed, or worse.
But if we stay doing nothing, we're going to get killed anyway. And maybe Murphy and Charity and your kids with us."
He bowed his head and nodded. "You're right. There's not really any choice." His hand covered mine for a moment, big and calloused and strong. Then he stood up again, his back straight and his shoulders squared.
"We just have to have faith.
The good Lord wouldn't give us more than we could bear."
"I hope you're right," I said.
"So what's the plan, Harry? What are we going to do?" I got up and went to the mantel over the fire, but what I needed wasn't there. I frowned, looking around the room, and spied it on the coffee table. I bent down and plucked up the white envelope, taking the gold-lettered invitation Kyle and Kelly Hamilton had delivered.
"We're going to a party."
Chapter 24. Michael parked his truck on the street outside Bianca's mansion. He put the keys in his leather belt pouch and buttoned it with a silver cross button. Then he straightened the collar of his doublet, which showed through the neck of the male, and reached behind the seat for the steel helmet that slipped on over his head.
"Tell me again, Harry, why this is a good idea. Why are we going to a masquerade ball with a bunch of monsters?"
"Everything points us this way," I said.
"How?"
I took a breath, trying to be patient, and passed him the white cloak.
"Look, we know that someone's been stirring up the spirit world. We know that they did it in order to create this nightmare that's been after us. We know that the girl Lydia was connected to the nightmare somehow."
"Yes," Michael said. "All right."
"Bianca," I said, "set out her thugs to take Lydia. And Bianca's hosting a party for the nastiest bad guys in the region. Stallings told me that people have been going missing off the streets. They've probably been taken for food or something. Even if Bianca isn't behind it, and I'm not saying she isn't, chances are that anyone who could be is going to be at the party tonight."
"And you think you'll be able to spot them?" Michael asked.
"Pretty sure," I responded. "All I have to do is get close enough to touch them, to feel their aura. I felt whoever was backing the nightmare when they helped to get it away from me. I should be able to tell when I feel them again."
"I don't like it," Michael said. "Why didn't the nightmare come after you the minute the sun went down?"
"Maybe I scared it. I cut it up a little."
Michael frowned. "I still don't like it. There are going to be dozens of things in there that have no right to exist in this world. It will be like walking into a room of wolves."
"All you have to do," I said, "is keep your mouth shut and watch my back. The bad guys have to play by the rules tonight. We've been given the protection of the old laws of hospitality. If Bianca doesn't respect that, it's going to kill her reputation in front of her guests and the vampire court."
"I will protect you, Harry," Michael said, "as I will protect anyone who these things threaten.
We don't need any fights, Michael. That's not why we're here."
He looked out the truck window and set his jaw.
"I mean it, Michael. It's their turf. There's probably going to be some bad stuff inside, but we have to keep the big picture in focus here."
"The big picture," he said. "Harry, if there's someone in there that needs my help, they're getting it."
"Michael, if we break the truce first, we're open game. You could get us both killed."
He turned to look at me. His eyes were granite.
"I am what I am, Harry." I threw my arms up in the air and banged my hands on the roof of the truck. "There are people who could get killed if we mess this up. It isn't only our lives we're talking about here."
"I know," he said. "My family are some of them, but that doesn't change anything."
"Michael," I said, "I'm not asking you to smile and chat and get cozy. Just keep quiet and stay out of the way. Don't shove a crucifix down anyone's throat. That's all I'm asking."
"I won't stand by, Harry," he said. "I can't." He frowned and said, "I don't think you can either." I glared at him.
"Oh, hell's bells, Michael. I don't want to die here."
"Nor do I. We must have faith."
"Great," I said. "That's just great."
"Harry, will you join me in prayer?" I blinked at him.
"What?"
"A prayer," Michael said. "I'd like to talk to him for a moment." He half smiled at me. "You don't have to say anything. Just be quiet and stay out of the way." He bowed his head. I squinted out the window of the truck, silent. I don't have anything against God, far from it, but I don't understand him. And I don't trust a lot of people who go around claiming that they're working at his best interest. Fairies and vampires and whatnot, those I can fathom, even demons. Sometimes even the fallen, I can understand why they do what they do. But I don't understand God. I don't understand how he could see the way people treat one another and not chalk up the whole human race as a bad idea. I guess he's just bigger about it than I would be.
Lord, Michael said, we walk into darkness now. Our enemies will surround us. Please help to make us strong enough to do what needs to be done. Amen. Just that. No fancy language, no flashy beseeching the Almighty for aid. Just quiet words about what he wanted to get done, and a request that God would be on his side, on our side. Simple words.
and yet power surrounded him like a cloud of fine mist, prickling along my arms and my neck. Faith. I calmed down a little. We had a lot going for us. We could do this. Michael looked up at me and nodded. All right, he said. I'm ready. How do I look? I asked him. He smiled, white teeth showing. You're going to turn heads, that's for sure. I had to smile back at him. Okay, I said, let's party. We got out of the truck and started walking toward the gates around Bianca's estate. Michael buckled on the white cloak with its red cross as he went. He had a matching surcoat, boots, and armored guards on his shoulders. He had a pair of heavy gauntlets tucked through his boots and bore a pair of knives on his belt, one on either side. He smelled like steel, and he clanked a little bit when he walked. It sounded comforting in a friendly, dreadnought kind of way. It would have been more stylish to drive up through the gates and have the valet park the truck, but Michael didn't want to hand over his truck to vampires. I didn't blame him. I wouldn't have trusted a blood-sucking, night-stalking fiend of the shadows valet either. The gate had an honest-to-goodness guardhouse with a pair of guards. Neither of them looked like they were carrying guns, but they held themselves with an armed arrogance that neither myself or Michael missed. I held up the invitation. They let us in. We walked up the drive to the house. A black limo pulled up along the drive as we did, and we had to step off to the side to let it pass. When we got to the front of the house, the occupants were just getting out of the car. The driver came around to the rear of the limo and opened it. Music washed out, something loud and hard. There was a moment's pause, and then a man glided out of the limo. He was tall, pale as a statue. Sable hair fell in tousled curls to his shoulders. He was dressed in a pair of opalescent butterfly wings that rose from his shoulders, fastened to him by some mysterious mechanism. He wore white leather gloves, their gauntlet cuffs decorated in winding silver designs, and similar designs were set around his calves, down to his sandals. At his side hung a sword, delicately made, the handle wrought as though out of glass. The only other thing he had on was a loincloth of some soft white cloth. He had the body for it, muscle, but not too much of it, good set of shoulders, and the pale skin wasn't darkened anywhere by hair. Hell's bells, I noticed how good he looked. The man smiled, bright enough for a toothpaste commercial, and then reached out a hand back down to the car. A pair of gorgeous legs and pink high heels slid out of the car, followed by a slender and scrumptious girl barely covered in flower petals. She had a short, tight skirt made out of them, and more petals cupped her breasts like delicate hands. Other than that, and the baby's breath woven into the tumbled mass of her black hair, she wore nothing. And she wore it well. In the heels, she might have been 5'7". She had a face that made me think she was both lovely and sweet. Her cheeks were flushed in a delicate pink blush, vibrant and alive. Her lips parted, and she had a look to her eyes that told me she was on something. Harry, Michael said, you're drooling. I am not drooling, I said. That girl can't be 19 years old. I'm not drooling, I scowled. Gripped my cane in hand and stalked up the driveway to the house and wiped my mouth with my sleeve, just in case. The man turned toward me, and both his eyebrows lifted. He looked me and my costume up and down and burst out into a rich, rolling laugh. Oh, my, he said. You must be Harry Dresden. That got my hackles up. It always bugs me when someone knows me and I don't know them. Yeah, I said. That's me. Who the hell are you? If the hostility bothered him, it didn't bother his smile. The girl with him slipped beneath his left arm and nestled against him, watching me with stoned eyes. Oh, of course, he said. I forget that you probably know very little of the intricacies of the court. My name is Thomas, of House Wraith, of the White Court. White Court, I said. Three vampire courts, Michael supplied. Black, red, and white. I knew that. Michael shrugged one shoulder. Sorry. Thomas smiled. Well, only two for all practical purposes. The Black Court has fallen on hard times of late, the poor darlings. His tone of voice suggested muted glee rather than pity. Mr. Dresden, allow me to introduce Justine. Justine, The girl beneath his arm gave a sweet smile. I half expected her to extend her hand to me to be kissed, but she didn't. She just molded her body to Thomas's in what looked like a most pleasant fashion.
"Charmed," I said. "This is Michael."
"Michael," Thomas mused and studied the man up and down. "Dressed as a Knight Templar."
"Something like that," Michael said.
"How ironic," Thomas said. His eyes turned to me and the smile widened. "And you, Mr. Dresden, your costume is going to make quite a stir."
"Why, thank you.
Shall we go inside?"
"Oh, let's."
We all trooped up the front stairs, affording me an uncomfortably proximate view of Justine's legs along the way, lean and lovely and made for doing things that had nothing to do with locomotion. A pair of tuxedo-clad doormen who looked human swung open the mansion's doors for us. The entry hall to Bianca's mansion had been redecorated since the last time I'd been there. The old-style decor had been lavishly restored. She'd had marble laid out instead of gleaming hard wood. All the doorways stood in graceful arches rather than solid rectangles. Alcoves every 10 feet or so sported small statuary or other pieces of art. It was lit only by the spots on each alcove, creating deep pools of shadow in between.
"Rather tacky," Thomas sniffed, his butterfly wings quivering. "Have you been to any court functions before, Mr. Dresden? Are you aware of the etiquette?"
"Not really," I said. "But it had better not involve anyone drinking anyone's bodily fluids, particularly mine." Thomas laughed richly.
No, well, he admitted. "Not formally, in any case, though there will be ample opportunity to indulge, if you wish."
His fingers caressed the girl's waist again, and she focused her eyes on me in a disconcertingly intent fashion.
"I don't think so. What do I need to know?"
"Well, we're all outsiders, not being members of the Red Court, and this is a Red function. First, we'll be presented to the company, and they'll have a chance to come meet us."
"Mingle, huh?"
"Just so. Afterwards, we'll be presented to Bianca herself, and she, in turn, will give us a gift."
"A gift?"
I asked. "She's the hosting party. Of course she'll be giving gifts," he smiled at me. "It's only civilized." I eyed him. I wasn't used to vampires being so chatty.
"Why are you so helpful?"
He laid his fingers upon his chest, lifting his eyebrows in a perfectly executed "who me" expression.
"Why, Mr. Dresden, why should I not help you?
You're a vampire."
"So I am," he said, "but I'm afraid I'm not a terribly good one."
He gave me a sunny smile and said, "Of course I could also be lying." I snorted.
"So, Mr. Dresden, rumor had it that you had refused Bianca's invitation."
"I had."
"What changed your mind?"
"Business."
"Business?" Thomas asked. "You're here on business."
I shrugged. "Something like that." I stripped off my gloves, trying to look casual, and offered him my hand.
"Thanks again."
His head tilted to one side, and he narrowed his eyes. He looked down at my hand and then back up at me, his gaze calculating, before trading grips with me. There was a faint, flickering aura about him. I felt it dance and glide over my skin like soft, cool wind. It felt odd. Different than the energy that surrounded a human practitioner, and nothing like the sense of whatever had been pumping up the nightmare. Thomas wasn't my man. I must have relaxed visibly because he smiled and said,
"I passed the test, huh?"
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"Whatever you say. You're an odd duck, Harry Dresden, but I like you."
And with that, he and his escort turned and glided together down the length of the entry hall and through the curtained doors at the far end. I glowered after them.
"Anything?"
Michael asked.
"He's clean," I said, "relatively speaking. Must be someone else here."
"You'll get the chance to do some handshaking, it sounds like," Michael said.
"Yeah, you ready?"
"Lord willing," Michael said. We started together down the hall and through the curtained doorway and emerged into Vampire Party Central. We stood on the concrete deck, elevated 10 feet off the rest of the vast outdoor courtyard. Music flowed up from below. People crowded the courtyard in a blur of color and motion, talk and costume, like some kind of impressionist painting. Glowing globes rested on wire stands here and there, giving the place a sort of torch-lit mystique. The dais, opposite the entryway we stood on, rose up several feet higher in the air, a suspiciously throne-like chair upon it. I just started to take in the details when a brilliant white light flooded my eyes, and I had to lift my hand against it. The music died down a bit, and the chatter of people quieted some. Evidently, Michael and I had just become the center of attention. A servant stepped forward and asked calmly, "May I have your invitation, sir?" I passed it over, and a moment later heard the same voice over a modest public address system. "Ladies and gentlemen of the court, I am pleased to present Harry Dresden, Wizard of the White Council, and guest." I lowered my hands, and the voices fell completely silent. From either side of the throne opposite, a pair of spotlights glared at me. I shrugged my shoulders to get my cape to fall into place correctly, tattered red lining flashing against the black cotton exterior. The collar of the thing came up high on either side of my face. The spot glared off to the painted gold medallion I wore at my throat. The worn powder blue tux beneath it could have made an appearance at someone's prom in the 70s. The servants at the party had better tuxes than I did. I made sure to smile so they could see the cheap plastic fangs. I suppose the spotlight must have bleached my face out to ghostly whiteness, especially with the white clown makeup I had on. The fake blood drooling out the corners of my mouth would be standing out bright red against it. I lifted a white-gloved hand and said, slurring a little through the fangs, "Hi! How are you all doing?" My words rang out on deathly silence from below. "I still can't believe," Michael said, sotto voice, "that you came to the vampire's masquerade ball dressed as a vampire." "Not just a vampire," I said. "A cheesy vampire. Do you think they got the point?" I managed to peer past the spotlights enough to make out Thomas and Justine at the foot of the stairs. Thomas was staring around the courtyard with undisguised glee, then flashed me a smile and a thumbs up. "I think," Michael said, "that you've just insulted everyone here. I'm here to find a monster, not to make nice with them. Besides, I never wanted to come to this stupid party in the first place. All the same, I think you've peeved them off." "Peeved? Come on, how bad could that be? Peeved?" From the courtyard below came several distinctive sounds. A few hisses, the rasp of steel, as several someones drew knives. Or maybe swords. The nervous click-clack of someone with a semi-automatic working the slide. Michael shrugged in his cloak, and I sensed, more than saw him, put his hand on the hilt of one of his knives. "I think we're about to find out." Chapter 25. Silence lay heavy over the courtyard. I gripped my cane and waited for the first gunshot, or whistle of a thrown knife, or blood-curdling scream of fury. Michael was a steel-smelling presence beside me, silent and confident in the face of the hostility. Hell's bells. I'd meant to give the vamps a little thumb of the nose with the costume, but wow! I didn't think I'd net this much of a reaction. "Steady, Harry," Michael murmured. "They're like mean dogs. Don't flinch or run. It will only set them off." "Your average mean dog doesn't have a gun," I murmured back, "or a knife, or a sword." But I remained where I stood, my expression bland. The first sound to ring out was neither gunshot nor battle cry, but rich, silvery laughter. It drifted up, masculine, somehow merry and mocking, bubbly and scornful all at once. I squinted down through the lights to see Thomas, posed like some bizarre post-chrysalis incarnation of Errol Flynn, one foot up on the stairs, hand-braced, his other hand on the crystalline hilt of his sword. His head was thrown back, every lean line of muscle on him displayed with the casual disregard of skilled effort. The butterfly wings caught the light at the edges of the spots and threw them back in dazzling colors.
"I've always heard,"
Thomas drawled, his voice loud enough to be heard by all, artfully projected.
"That the Red Court gave its guests a warm welcome. I hadn't thought I'd get such a picturesque demonstration, though."
He turned toward the dais and bowed.
"Lady Bianca, I'd be sure to tell my father about all this dizzying display of hospitality."
I felt my smile harden, and I peered past the spotlights to the dais.
Bianca, dear, there you are. This was a costume party, was it not? A masquerade? And we were all supposed to come dressed as something we weren't? If I misread the invitation, I apologize."
I heard a woman's voice murmur something, and the spotlights flicked off. I was left in the dark for a minute until my eyes could adjust and I could regard the woman standing across from me upon the dais. Bianca wasn't tall, but she was statuesque in a way you'd only find in erotic magazines and embarrassing dreams. Pale of skin, dark of hair and eye, full of sensuous curves from her mouth to her hips, everything possessed of luscious ripeness, coupled with slender strength that would have caught the eye of any man. She wore a gown of flickering flame. I don't mean that she wore a red dress. She wore flame, gathered about her in the shape of an evening gown, blue at its base, fading through the colors of a candle to red as it cupped her full, gorgeous breasts. More flame danced and played through the elegant piles of her dark hair, flickering over her like a tiara. She had on a pair of real high heels, at least, adding several inches to her rather unimpressive height. The shoes did interesting things to the shape of her legs. The curve of her smile promised things that were probably illegal and bad for you, and would carry warnings from the Surgeon General, but you'd still want to do over and over again. I wasn't interested. I had seen what was underneath her mask once before. I couldn't forget what was there.
"Well," she purred, her voice carrying over the whole of the courtyard, "I suppose I shouldn't have expected any more taste from you, Mr. Dresden, though perhaps we will see about your taste later in the evening."
Her tongue played over her teeth, and she gave me a dazzling smile. I watched her, watched behind her, a pair of figures in black cloaks. Hardly more than vague shapes behind her stood quietly, as though ready to attack if she snapped her finger. I suppose every decent flame cast shadows.
"I think you'd better not try it."
Bianca laughed again. Several in the courtyard joined in with her, though it was a nervous thing.
"Mr. Dresden," she said, "many things can change a man's mind."
She crossed her legs slowly, flashing naked skin up to her taut, silky thigh as she did.
"Perhaps we'll find something that changes yours."
She waved her hand, lazy and arrogant.
"Music. We are here to celebrate. Let's do so."
The music began again while I sorted out the meaning behind what Bianca had just said. She had given her tacit permission for her people to try to get to me. They couldn't just walk up and bite me, maybe, but sheesh, I'd have to be on my guard. I thought of Kelly Hamilton's narcotic kisses on my throat, the glowing warmth that surrounded me, infused me, and shivered. Some part of me wondered what it might be like to let the vamps catch me, and if it would be all that bad. Another chewed furiously over everything I'd seen so far that evening. Bianca clearly had something in mind. I shook my head and glanced back at Michael. He nodded to me, a slight motion beneath the great helm, and we both descended the stairs. My legs were shaking, making the trip down unsteadily. I prayed that none of the vamps noticed it. Wouldn't do to let them see weakness, even if I was as nervous as a bird in a coal mine.
"Do what you need to do, Harry," Michael said low. "I'll be a couple of steps behind you, to your right. I'll watch your back."
Michael's words steadied me, calmed me, and I felt profoundly grateful for them. I expected the vamps to descend on me in a charming and dangerous cloud when I reached the courtyard, but they didn't. Instead, Thomas was waiting for me, with one hand on the hilt of his sword, his pale body on shameless display. Justine showed a bit behind him. His face practically glowed with glee.
"Oh, my! That was marvelous, Harry!" May I call you Harry? No, I said. I caught myself, though, and tried to soften the answer. But thanks for what you said when you did. Things might have gotten ugly.
Thomas's eyes danced.
They still might, Mr. Dresden. But we couldn't have it descending into a general brawl, now, could we?
We couldn't?
No, of course not.
There would be far fewer opportunities to seduce and deceive and backstab.
I snorted.
I suppose you've got a point. The tip of his tongue touched his teeth when he smiled.
I usually do.
Thanks, Thomas. He glanced aside and frowned. I followed his gaze. Justine had drifted away from him and now stood with a bright smile on her sweet face as she spoke to a lean, smiling man dressed in a scarlet tuxedo and a domino mask. While I watched, the man reached out and stroked his fingers over her shoulder. He made some comment that made the lovely girl laugh.
"Excuse me," Thomas said with distaste. "I can't abide poachers. Do enjoy the party, Mr. Dresden."
He drifted off toward them, and Michael stepped up to me. I half turned my head toward him to hear him murmur, "They're surrounding us." I looked around. The courtyard was full of people. Many of them were young, pretty folk, dressed in all manner of black, poster children for the goth subculture. Leather, plastic, and fishnet seemed to be the major themes in display, complete with black domino masks, heavy hoods upon cloaks, and a variety of kinds of face paint. They talked and laughed, drank and danced to the music. Some of them wore a band of scarlet cloth around their arm, or a blood-red choker around their throats. While I watched, I saw a too lean young man bend over a table to inhale something through one nostril. A trio of giggling girls, two blondes and a brunette, all dressed up like Dracula's cheerleading squad, complete with black and white pom-poms, counted to three together and washed down a pair of pills with glasses of dark wine. Other young people pressed together in sensual motion, or simply sat or stood kissing, touching. A few, already partied out, lay upon the courtyard, smiling dreamily, their eyes closed. I scanned the crowd with my eyes and picked out the differences at once. Drifting among the young people, clad in black, were lean figures in scarlet, perhaps two or three dozen in all, male and female, of a variety of appearances and costumes. All shared the scarlet clothes, beauty, and a confident, stalking kind of motion that marked them as predators. "The Red Court," I said. I licked my lips and looked around some more. The vampires were being casual about it, but they had wandered into a ring around us. If we remained there any longer, we wouldn't be able to walk out of the courtyard without coming within a few feet of one of them. "The kids with the red bands are what? Junior vampires?"
"Marked cattle, I'd say," Michael rumbled. There was anger in it, steady and slow anger.
"Easy, Michael. We need to move around a little, make it harder for them to hem us in."
"Agreed."
Michael nodded toward the drink table, and we headed that way, our pace brisk. The vamps tried to adjust to follow us, but they couldn't make it look casual. A couple in red moved to intercept us, meeting Michael and me just before we reached the table. Kyle Hamilton wore a Harlequin's outfit, all in shades of scarlet. Kelly followed along with him, dressed in a scarlet body stocking that left nothing to the imagination, but with a long cloak covering her shoulders and collarbones, the hood up high around her face. A scarlet mask hid her features, except for her chin and luscious mouth. I thought I could see a puckering of skin to one side of her mouth, perhaps the burns she'd suffered.
"Harry Dresden," Kyle greeted me in a too loud voice and a too wide smile. "How pleasant to see you again."
I chucked him boisterously on the shoulder, making his balance waver.
"I wish it was mutual."
The smile became brittle.
"And of course you remember my sister, Kelly?"
"Sure, sure," I said. "Hit that tanning bed a little too long, did we?" I expected her to snarl or hiss or go for my throat, but instead she turned to the table, collected a silver goblet and a crystal wine glass from the attendant there, and offered them to us with a smile that mirrored her brother.